Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
We've all heard of NIMBYism, haven't we? The acronym for Not In My Backyard, a complaint from those who object to proposed new developments. But a new movement, YIMBYs, say yes in my backyard to any kind of new housing development, even high density or high rise, if it helps to boost the supply of homes. Well, one such YIMBY, Carl Dieter, joins me on the line now. And here in the studio is Lorcan Sir, Senior Lecturer in Housing Studies at Technical University Dublin, who says, don't blame the objectors. It's the speculators' fault. So, Carl, I'm going to start with you. Good morning to you first. You're in a really unusual position yourself. You believe that everyone should be prepared to allow housing to be built near them, no matter how much that damages the price of their house.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at the situation we have with homelessness, with, you know, not having enough housing for people, all those problems, you're not going to solve it by stopping that activity from occurring. And I just think that it's a far more, socially cohesive approach to say, you know, I don't want to keep people out of my area, that I actually do, you know, love and cherish everybody. And in that sense, if you want to live near me, I welcome you. And I think that that's the right way to do it. I think it's actually, it's really wrong that every time there's a sizable development, that just all these different groups start to line up and stop it. And I suppose in housing, you fall into two camps. You've got those who can create housing and those who can't. You know, I don't make housing. I'm not a carpenter. I can't functionally do it. And I feel there's a moral imperative to not stand in the way of the people who can build housing. So my message is clear in general. If you believe in people and believe in our ability to get through a housing crisis, then you've got to say yes. If you don't, and you start these objections, you're actually creating the problem that you say gives you cause for concern. I think that's just deeply cynical, deeply hypocritical. So I'm saying yes.
And you really are saying yes, because I don't want to make this too personalised, but you're in this situation yourself, aren't you?
I am. In fact, there's a strategic housing development happening that is totally going to affect me. I mean, my house is mentioned in the plan because that's how affected it is. Mm-hmm. There'll be over 400 homes going in around me possibly, and places that were fields where I'd hunt or train dogs, they'll all be houses. But I've just gone straight to the acceptance phase. And it's really liberating. You know, I'm not going to fight progress. It seems illogical. And it must be exhausting to sit around saying no, for a million reasons, no. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to stop thinking about housing as if it's a standalone thing. I mean, imagine if houses were jobs and someone announced 1,000 jobs. People wouldn't jump up and down and protest screaming, this is terrible. If those people get a job, there'll be less money in the economy for me. We know that's not the case. Everyone's better off when we all have jobs. And in the same way, everybody, when it comes to housing, is better off when there is abundant, accessible, and ideally affordable housing.
Lorcan, can I bring you in on this? You believe that people with reasonable objections to a planning application are entitled to air their views. But given the crisis that we're in, the more we object to development, isn't it clear and true that the more house prices will rise?
Look, the first thing to say here is that, you know, Carl and myself and yourself, we're looking to live in an environment where we have the opportunity to participate in a planning process, and we should cherish that. We should be very wary of reducing the ability for public participation for lots of reasons, partly because it improves transparency and reduces corruption and increases trust in politics.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should, though.
No, but there's a couple of issues here and like really big assumptions. And the first one is that objections or observations, as they're properly called, stop development. Don't objections just go in and there's something that they're had regard to, and if they are serious enough, a development will stop, but only on direction of the courts. And if the court decide that something is seriously wrong with the application and it's seriously detrimental, then they will stop the development. So putting in an observation that turns out to be an objection is not going to necessarily stop, only the courts will stop any development. And the second assumption here is that all development is good, and of course all development is not good. Some of it is terrible, and some of the plans that get submitted are awful. And we saw a good case a couple of years ago where a very senior politician objected to the conversion of a pub in his constituency to 41 apartments. And he objected to that. And what turned out there was more than 200 co-living units, actually with 14 co-living units in the basement, which Umbar Plana, in fairness, took out. So, you know, he is on record as saying that I'm in favour of development, just not every development. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful that not all development is good. We've seen, we've built thousands of houses and housing units, shall we say, over the last few years. Lots of student accommodation, lots of co-living, lots of built to rent. They are not much good for families trying to access affordable accommodation.
People getting in touch with us on this one. Carl, for you, this person says, stop labelling objectors as the bogeymen. No other European capitals allow high-rise monster towers beside the old quarter of their city. So sometimes you have to object because what's being proposed is just wrong.
Okay, well, look, if they prefer to have no houses, then justify that however you want. Like, you've got to sleep at night. And people have to live with their own cognitive dissonance where they say, oh, I'm against homelessness, I'm against high house prices, and yet I'm also against more houses. Deal with that whatever way you want. I'm at the acceptance phase. I know that the answer is to start saying yes.
Lorcan? One of the processes we have that was brought in by lobbying, by lobbyists a couple of years ago who pretty much wrote the legislation, is the strategic housing development process, which is what's going up beside Carl there. And that effectively removes opportunities for public participation. And I know, because I went and looked up the numbers, that, you know, there's currently in the four Dublin local authorities, which is where the main housing affordability crisis is, there's 26,500 planning permissions under the SHD process alone. Only 1% of those have been ever built. So it's very, you know, and that's before COVID, because we don't want to bring in COVID to mess it up. So only 1.4% of those have been built. So it's evidently not planning objections or people putting in observations that's holding up development. Mm-hmm. It's land speculation. It's people getting planning permission for land and then selling on to someone else who gets even more and selling it on.
You have no problem then with serial objectors as they're described.
Well, I'd like to know what a definition of a serial objector is. How many objections or observations do you have to put in to be categorised as a serial objector? And one of the interesting things is I think a lot of politicians would fall into that category, because when you look up particularly kind of controversial developments, you'll find it's politicians who are in there, and very, very senior politicians. I'm not going to mention them, but, you know, people way at the top of government are, you know, they could well fall into the category of serial objector. And it's one of the roles that kind of local politicians, in particular TDs and councillors, fulfil on behalf of their constituents. It's public participation. It's a democracy. Mm. That's what we live in.
Do you think that should be stopped?
Absolutely not.
The third-party property rights, by the way, which is the Irish way of dealing with planning, you know, most countries don't actually have that. And that's a really important thing. The fact that you can, like, weigh in on other people's property and have some rights on that, it doesn't exist in other countries. My little brother is a builder in Arkansas. He can get permission to build a house in 3 weeks. And guess what? Because they have effective planning and building, they don't have a housing crisis. I mean, like, a tornado can come and rip your house off the ground and then that's a crisis, but that's not, like, a statewide thing.
I'm not sure we should be holding up America as a virtue of anything to do with town planning or sustainable development, to be honest with you, Carol, as you know.
Now, Lorcan, don't start that, you know, Europe look down your nose at America crap. New York, Chicago, all over America, they've got wonderful stuff there. That's really, really dismissive of a wonderful country. Don't be like that.
No, I'm saying it is well known that, like, you know, if for unsustainable development, they might get planning permission in 3 weeks in somewhere like Arkansas, but, you know, America is not exactly a bastion of good town planning. Like, best practice in planning,
be specific, where's bad?
Best practice in planning, as we know, is about early engagement, and it's more frequent engagement, and that has proven throughout Europe to provide better outcomes for developers and for communities, and so it's called co-creation. Right, what we're intent on here and what we've been doing for the last 5 years since Alan Kelly is restricting public participation, and that has ended up in the courts, and we find that on Bord Pleanála, for example, are losing 80% of all judicial reviews that are taken against them because of bad legislation.
Do you believe, Lorcan, that if we drastically increase supply, we are going to make houses more affordable?
Well, the last time we drastically increased supply, the only thing that brought down house prices was a market crash. So, you know, you got to realise that housing is like a luxury good, and you don't find luxury goods makers oversupplying a market, because nobody builds when prices are falling. So it's called the absorption rate. So typically house builders will supply housing at a rate to maintain the price that they want to make a profit at. And what we see recently with government with Help to Buy and shared equity is what we're doing is helping people afford what's on offer rather than making what's on offer more affordable. Yeah. So we're maintaining those high
prices. It's a decent point, Carl, and we don't have to look back too far. When we had a glut of housing in the boom, there were houses that people couldn't afford then either.
True. But I mean, if you make a mistake in the past, it doesn't mean that you won't make a mistake now or that what we're doing isn't a mistake. So, I mean, you can say yes to all that stuff and still say yes to housing.
Yeah, but the
and
bottom line of your argument is, isn't it? Like, don't say no to stuff in your area because we need the supply. But putting the supply in place doesn't necessarily mean that people will be able to afford to buy the homes.
Okay, let me reverse that question to you, Claire. So let's just say that we say no to everything and nothing happens. Will we be any better off, yes or no?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it's a good point. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, Lorcan.
I think you do. I think you know we won't.
Yeah, you know, the supply argument is kind of, it's very, I don't want to use the word simplistic, but it's very black and white, it's very linear. You need the right supply at the right price and the right type of supply. So just throwing up anything, like we could build 25,000 student houses next year and the number of houses built would be, 25,000.
Well, I don't know if they get counted.
No, okay, but built to rent.
You're talking like the Goldilocks parable of when we were kids.
But the point
is, get it just right. It's never just right, and that's why you have to go at it one way or the other.
Well, Carol is right there. It is never just right. And one of the kind of misnomers that's put out there is that we have a dysfunctional housing market. Actually, that makes the assumption that there is such a thing as a functional housing market, and we've never had a functional housing market. Supply and demand, if you want to look at it in those terms, are like two ships passing the night in the middle of the Atlantic at 3 a.m. and they see each other for 20 seconds and then they're gone in different directions. So it is really tricky to get this, but I think the assumption that all supply is good supply, I think, is flawed.
Mm-hmm. Like, if we just have a listener here who says, if the building of a new house or houses affect the value of a current house, this is for you, Carl, who pays the loss? What happens if it pushes the person into negative equity? Should that matter, Carl?
Well, when you start getting into capital values, this is a really complex one because, for instance, imagine if the state builds a railroad next year with a station and then your house goes up on 100 grand. Who taxes that gain? Like, you just suddenly your house goes up massive and no one gets that. So, like, I think part of it has to be more effective property taxation. And in that case, then you'd be compensated through lower property tax.
So you have to take the hits either way, the hits and the gains.
But when you say the hits, that's if you sell. I mean, if you're living in a place and you want to live there, then I'm not sure. Like, is there necessarily a loss? Is the gain that you might have had, was it real to begin with? What did you do to improve the property? There's a lot of stuff in property that it doesn't work the way that, like, standard accounting would when you look at that, because you have to think about it as well. Like, your house value might adjust, but your house value could also go up. And so this idea that it's negative by nature, I mean, even that starting point is worth questioning.
Mm-hmm. You see, there's a difference, isn't there, Lorcan? Will you tell me whether you think there is? If somebody's building something beside you and you're upset about how it's going to impact you, that's one thing. But people who are objecting to planning applications that go in at the other end of the country, is that right, fair and reasonable?
Yeah, it's an interesting point whether somebody in Donegal should have a right to oppose the development going on in Drumcondra. And tends to be three reasons, or there tends to be kind of fairly good reasons why they do. First of all, a lot of the objections at that level are thematic ones, so they're things about the environment. Brent Geese landing in St. Anne's Park in Raheny, for example, or whatever. The Brent Geese don't recognise the difference between the boundaries around Dublin City Council and the boundaries around Donegal. So these are national issues. Environment, climate issues, these are national issues. So somebody in Donegal, you know, could well object to something going on in Drumcondra if they see that as negative.
And they are right and have a right to do that.
And the second issue is that quite often there are technical flaws in the decision. So I'm quite entitled to object to a decision made in Letterkenny if I think Ambar Pleanála have erred in law or the local authority have made an erroneous decision. And why wouldn't I? Because ultimately myself and Carol and yourself were taxpayers. And any bad development that goes on, whether it's in North County Dublin or North County Donegal, is we're going to end up paying the price for that as taxpayers, mm-hmm. either through, you know, climate emissions fees because we've created unsustainable development, or by, you know, inappropriate development that people don't want to live in and a waste of resources and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's incumbent, it's not just that you have a right to, it's kind of incumbent on people to observe what's going on in their areas and make and participate in the process.
Okay, Carl, he's encouraging more objections.
He's encouraging observations.
Yeah, no, well, I don't know that you are. You see, I mean, like, Lorcan just mentioned something about, like, Brent Geese, and I'll just say this much. If it comes down to being on the side of housing a baby or a bird, I know which side I'm on, and I rest easy at night knowing it. And I think all people should do the same. Just say yes.
A listener here says we should charge serial objectors €100 per kilometre from their home to the development and that will sort it out. Carl, you'd love that now, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, actually.
The TDs could probably claim their expenses.
I want to find whoever wrote that text into you and just personally thank them. That's a brilliant idea.
Well, we have Paul in Leixlip saying yes in my backyard. I completely agree with Carl. Where can I sign up to be a YIMBY? And you'll have parents listening to this. We had some of them on the television programme on Monday night, you know, saying, I'm living at home here with my children who are saving for a deposit and they can't buy anything in the can't afford anything, And for many people, they will just start saying yes, Lorcan. That's possibly what we're looking at now.
Yeah, the problem, that whole YIMBY movement comes from America, and it's quite a deregulatory movement. So it's about kind of you know reducing the shackles of development and letting it loose around the place. And you don't really end up with necessarily any accommodation that's affordable. So those people, I can tell you,
it's working in places, Lorcan. So that's just not true.
Those people whose children are back living at home with them in their mid 30s, you know, we've seen an increase in supply over the last 5 years. And we've seen now the government set thresholds of what they consider affordable, including up to 450,000. So there's still no hope for those people getting accommodation unless the government decide to subsidise them, which is what they're doing and maintaining high house prices. The same houses that 450,000 in Dublin are for sale for 220,000 in other parts of the country. So it's not necessarily the cost of construction, but probably the price that people have paid for the land that's the problem.
Yeah, and that's where property tax comes in, and that's why you need more property tax, and that'll get everyone hopping angry too. But unfortunately, it is the way forward.
I would kind of agree with Carl there. There's a site value tax, a land value tax that we should really be seriously looking at there, and I think that would probably soften the cough of a lot of...
You don't kind of agree, Lorcan. You wholeheartedly agree. Well, it's my choice. Just say it.
Sean in Salbridge says some objectors simply do so because their town or village doesn't have the infrastructure to cope with the anticipated
pressures that will
follow. Yes, we require houses quickly, but we must have the infrastructure alongside housing. And that seems like a fairly reasonable point to end on. Lorcan and Carl, thank you both very much indeed.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.